Hi, and welcome to the After Animals podcast.
After Animals uncovers trends and stories at the cutting edge of the global post-animal movement. What does a future look like in which food, fashion, and entertainment no longer have to exploit animals to be successful?
Each episode, we will share with you a remarkable and inspiring story about someone who is forging a more compassionate future for us all.
After Animals is co-produced and hosted by me, Sharanya Krishnaprasad.
And me, Yulara Nakagawa. So Sharanya, this week I had the opportunity to speak to Eshar Ben-Sharit, who is the founder and CEO of Redefine Meat, an Israeli startup hoping to launch its 3D-printed vegan steak into the world sometime in 2020.
Wow.
And just so you know, when we talk about Redefine Meat, it was formerly called Jet Eat, and they recently changed their name. So sometimes during the interview, you'll hear both names used interchangeably.
Got it. Okay.
Jet Eat was founded in early 2018 and has developed its own proprietary technology to create a 3D printed vegan meat product that will taste and feel like the real thing and will actually be as affordable, if not more affordable, for consumers.
Wow, that sounds like a great way to use technology.
Absolutely. Now, this interview was so interesting and packed with so much information. I can't wait for you to hear it. So can we just get started?
Yes, please. I can't wait.
Great.
Hi. So I am so excited to connect with you today and have the opportunity to share with our listeners the incredibly innovative and game-changing technology and vision that you've created with Jet Eat. We have a lot to cover, I'm sure. So let's dive right in. Tell me, please, how you got started in this field and how you came up with the idea for Jet Eat.
Okay, so actually, I like to think that all of my life trajectory led me to start this company. And this is probably what I was supposed to do in life because it starts from my childhood. I grew up in a kibbutz. Kibbutz is an agricultural community that we have in Israel. And my mother was a dairy farmer. So I grew up around animals. But also the other side of my family was really obsessed about eating meat. So I grew up in a family that on one hand takes care of animals and one hand like to eat them very much. And even as a child, I started cooking meat and enjoying eating meat and worked in a restaurant. My uncle had a restaurant, so I went there as a child to work to study how to prepare meat. In a sense, if you met me 5 years ago, I would tell you that my hobby is eating meat. But actually 4 years ago, I stopped eating meat because suddenly dawned me, it was connected to the fact that I became a father, that I don't want to eat a living creature that is dead now. And stopping eating meat, I switched the obsession with meat with the obsession that I don't have meat now to eat. So I need to find something else to eat. So I started to deal a lot with meat replacement and meat alternatives and naturally became very disappointed versus the experiences that I have had in the past. And it led me to think, what is the way to create a different kind of meat? And there are many, many different technologies now that people are working on to create meat alternatives that I don't have anything to add to because I'm not a biologist and I don't have experience in growing cells in a lab. I did have experience in printing, digital printing and 3D printing because that was my professional career. I was a product manager leading development and launch of two different platforms in the printing world. And I saw that many people, many companies, almost a decade are talking about 3D printing as a means to create better alternative meat. And I said, here, I have something that I care about. I have an area that I have knowledge in. It's probably meant to be. And I started to talk with people and telling them I'm going to start a company to 3D print meat. And everybody told me, yeah, makes sense. If somebody can do it, it's probably you. And I quit my job and I started the company. Even before I knew what would be the technology, and even knowing what exactly is going to be the product that we're going to develop, I said, there is a huge need to create meat that doesn't come from an animal. Probably 3D printing will have an important role in that. Now it's a matter of who will take this task on himself and actually look at it as a serious R&D and business project. And that was a little over a year ago. And here we are today, 3D printing meat and eating it, and it's really tasty.
That is such an incredible personal story. So you had your first child, you mentioned, 4 years ago. Congratulations. And what was it about that experience that made you decide you didn't want to kill living beings?
So first, I have to say something very personal. So I don't think it's rational, and I don't think it's something that can happen to many other people, because people stop eating meat for different reasons. For me, it's very strange and very emotional. When I think about eating animals today, especially mammals, I think about the fact that they also have a mother and a father, and that probably the love that their parents felt to them is similar to what I feel towards my kids. And I don't want anybody to eat my kids, so I don't want to eat anybody else's child. And I know it doesn't make sense because I ate animals for all of my life, and you know our family gathering and celebration was around eating meat. But this is something that got into me almost suddenly. So there was a specific day, I remember that day, that I said, "That's it. I will never eat meat again." And ever since that day, I didn't eat meat. So it's not something that is easy to explain and easy to understand. I certainly don't expect other people to go through the same process. I'm not an evangelist of not eating meat, because I know how much I enjoyed eating meat and how it was a part of my culture and my life and how I spend time. I don't expect other people to go through the same process. But for me, it's so strong that it's actually very hard for me to look at pictures. I have many, many pictures of me holding steaks, of me holding a big leg of a lamb. And today I'm pretty shocked that, you know, I ate parts of living creatures that once was a very nice, friendly, cute animal that had a mother and a father.
Wow, that is such a powerful story. Thank you for sharing it.
I want to add one thing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to convince anybody, even in this project, that they should become vegan or vegetarian. And even personally, I feel a little bit hypocritic because I'm not vegan, I'm just vegetarian. And I drink milk, for example, and the suffering and the abuse of animals in the milk industry is not less than the animal meat industry. But I understand that it's very hard for people to not eat meat and not rely on animals as providers of food. But I really think it should change. I don't think it would disappear. I don't think people will stop eating meat. And I'm telling everybody that the right approach would be to eat better meat from animals. So not kill animals and, you know, pollute the environment for products that aren't amazing. And for everything else, eat plant-based alternatives.
Thank you for adding that. No, I mean, you're pragmatic and mission-driven, and that's what we need more of in this world. I mean, I can completely relate in the sense that even though I stopped eating meat over 20 years ago, I still like it. Like I remember, I like the smell and the taste and the texture. And this is why the work you're doing and so many other game changers now that are really hitting the mainstream are really so inspiring to me on a personal level.
But I'll tell you why you like it. Because there is no other food product that has this intense experience as meat, unfortunately. So you remember, because my wife never had meat for her entire life. So she doesn't know what is this experience of putting something in your mouth that is so tasty, so rich, and have these levels of fat and level of different ingredients, different tastes and flavors. You cannot substitute it with a good pasta or a good lentil dish. So that's a problem. So this is why I also miss meat. I say to everybody, I love meat. I enjoy eating meat, but I don't eat it because come from an animal.
Sharanya, this part really resonated with me because even though I haven't personally eaten animal-based protein or meat for over 20 years, I always liked meat. I liked the texture of it, the smell of it, and the act of eating it. I just purely stopped for ethical reasons. And so even today when I smell it, it doesn't offend me. Like when I smell it cooking, I almost think I could still find it enjoyable.
Yeah, it's very different than my own experience because, as you know, I grew up vegetarian, so I never consumed any meat. Mm-hmm. And now when I taste the plant-based alternatives that are supposed to mimic the taste and texture of meat, it almost turns me off because I feel it's too close to the real thing. I'm just not comfortable with it.
I think you said you relate it back to the animal.
Yeah, I do relate it back to the animal, because if it's trying to mimic the real texture and flavor of animal-based meat, then that's something that I consciously do not want to consume.
Right, whereas I don't have that connection.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting. This actually may be tied back to something evolutionary. My preference, because there's something called the Maillard reaction, and that's a chemical reaction that gives brown food its distinctive and attractive flavor.
Yeah.
Some of the foods that would fit into this category would be toasted marshmallows, toasted bread, pan-fried dumplings, or seared steaks. Now, the evolutionary part is that, according to some experts, the Maillard reaction is a way for us to know that the product has been cooked. So the aroma would alert us back in the day that whatever we were eating, especially meat, was safe to eat.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's another interesting statistic that I came across as I was looking into this topic, which is that 75% of people who go vegetarian revert back.
Wow, that's a high percentage.
It's very, very high, and I personally know many people that turned vegetarian for ethical reasons and went back because they missed that smell and experience and taste of meat so badly. Yeah, so this is great, right, that there, these alternatives are coming up, although you probably won't be the biggest consumer of them.
Although I will say, if it had to do with cheese, then I would be right up there, because that is definitely something that I missed when I went from being vegetarian to vegan.
Yeah.
I missed the texture and flavor of cheese.
Right.
Which you can't really get in a plant-based analog.
Oh my goodness, I'm sure so many people that went vegan would be able to relate to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
To your point about every animal having parents, I don't know, you just watched some footage of calves being taken away from mother cows, and there's videos out there of the mothers chasing the trucks for, you know, long distances as their babies are taken away. And that's kind of what I was reminded of when you were sharing your story. So that's your aha moment. I think we all have them. And then just to dive in, I know we have to keep rolling and I have so many questions for you. I did see that you have been testing already with actual chefs and butchers who work with animal-based meat. I was wondering, how are they reacting to your product, and what have you learned from working with them?
So we decided very early on that what we need to do first is to really understand meat. And for us, understanding meat has some element of what is meat, what is it comprised of, you know, analyzing different elements in it. But we looked for the people that understand meat. And actually, this was something that was a little bit surprising. The meat experts are actually butchers. So when you look at a chef that knows meat really well, in many, many cases, the same will rely on a butcher to deliver the meat to them. So actually, I've been talking a lot with butchers and visiting butcher shops, really trying to dive into their craft. So for some, it's an art. And not long ago, but recently, we started to incorporate them in some of our tasting and testing. Because when we say we develop meat alternatives, we're focusing on beef. And even within beef, there are hundreds of different combinations of a breed of an animal, its lifespan, the way it's cut, the way it's prepared. So for that, even chefs have some kind of a limitation versus butchers that understand meat very well. And I thought that they will kick me out of their stores when I'll tell them I want to put a 3D printer that prints vegan meat in a butcher shop. But actually, all of them that I've talked to so far, and including very traditional butchers, third or fourth generation, they feel that their industry will change. So they know that 10 years or 20 years from now, the behavior of consumers will be different, and it will have a huge impact on the business. So they really want to be a part of this change. And this is really important in my point of view, because we have this, the meat industry, or the people that are connected to meat for centuries, that want to be a part of this change. And actually, one of the latest achievements that we had, probably the best butcher in Europe, came to Israel to visit us. And he told us that the story is very interesting, the technology and the approach and the team looks really well. But when he tasted the first products that we had, he understood how it's going to be possible to create good meat, not from animals. So that was really exciting. The fact that the product, not the story, not the vision, not the presentation, but actually what you put in your mouth and eat delivers the, it's not perfect, we have a lot of work, but it delivers, immediately tells your brain that 10 years from now, we're going to all enjoy amazing meat that doesn't come from animals. And probably in the next 3 to 5 years, we will create much better products as meat alternatives that are premium products, that are meat-like, that are healthier and better for the environment. And it's already happening today in Israel. So we have good things already, and we're sharing it in terms of tasting with chefs and butchers, Israelis and abroad. And we're starting to serve it to people just to see the reaction, just to get feedback and to see what are people liking and disliking about the product. But butchers are definitely our strongest partners so far.
Wow, that is unbelievable that they are reacting in this way. I would have never imagined. And so do you know why they see the potential in the future? Is it because they don't think it's scalable in terms of an environmental cost? Or what are they actually thinking? I'm just so curious to know. Or do they just think that we can, it just doesn't make sense to actually kill the animals? Like, where are they coming from?
So I think that a lot of them, not a lot of them, all of them still believe that meat and especially beef is an important part of a human society, but they know that on one hand, prices will go up. All over the world, prices of meat are going up, and that impacts the demand. So it's not that people are buying the same amounts. And also, consumers are starting to reduce their meat intake, especially in, if you look at Europe and the USA and in Israel, certainly. So they know that the number of butchers, if we look at butchers is not only the only target customers that we have. Butchers are shutting down all over the world, either from consolidation or from just the fact that meat is more expensive and people are trying to buy less meat. And if they would not attract consumers that they don't attract today, and if they won't have a better portfolio of products, the business is in risk. Maybe it's not immediate risk, but in the long term, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, it will happen. And because it's a traditional industry, many of the butchers and even the big meat distribution companies are family companies that are third or fourth generation. They don't want to leave the next generation with nothing. So they have two options, either to say, we sell meat and meat will never go away, or to say, meat will change and we will be a part of it. But we know how to reach restaurants. We know how to reach consumers. We know what they like. We know in this holiday, what kind of product do they need, and on the weekend that they need other products. So why not look for alternative sources? Why does it have to come from a cow, from an animal, if prices of cows are increasing and consumers want something else? So it's a very, again, pragmatic approach and realistic, because they're selling meat today and because people like to buy meat. And if people want to buy a different kind of meat, why not have the same people sell it? The only thing is that when you look at pure vegan consumers, I don't think they would like to go to a butcher shop and buy their vegan meat from somebody who's also selling many, many different kinds of meat from animals, but I don't think our product today vegans will like it. I think some vegans will like it, but for many vegans, it will be too intense.
Yeah. It's
too much meat. Like.
Well, we know that represents under 1% of what we're targeting the population. So to make impactful, wide scale change, we do have to appeal to the actual meat eaters. And it sounds like you're partnering and gaining incredible intel from the ultimate meat eater and meat experts, at least in Israel. But it sounds like the problem is global, so this will just revolutionize itself. I'm so pumped to hear this. I mean, I had no idea. What a learning. The chefs, that was the other part. I know tomorrow you have a very exciting event milestone coming up. Would you mind sharing a little bit about this and why it's going to be so important moving forward for Jet Eat?
Very important to say before I'm going to answer is that we're a young company, and development of technology and food takes a long time, especially developing alternative meat. But we already have a product today that we feel that it's very tasty, which is the most important thing, and very much meat-like. Almost to a point, you know, it's up to us to prove. I believe that most people that eat meat today will not distinguish it from meat. So what we did, we decided is that we cannot do everything in our lab. We have some panels of tasting in our lab, and we invite people, including experts. But we try to push ourselves to more difficult environments. And actually, tomorrow we're serving a product for the first time in a restaurant as part of a dinner. So it's not going to be a special event. It's not going to be a tech demonstration. It's going to be a good dinner in a good restaurant. where many, many different items will be served. Most of them are meat, so it's not a vegan restaurant. It's a restaurant that takes pride in the meat that they serve. And one of the meat products will be our alternative meat. And it's an important milestone because usually when people come to our lab and taste our product, they have some kind of idea about what they're going to eat. Because when they come, they know it's a technology company. They know we incorporate 3D printing in the way we produce the product. They know we don't have anything from all the lab says no food items coming from animals can be introduced to the lab. So you know you're eating a vegan, plant-based meat alternative. Tomorrow we're going to, and this is again something that is very, very different in our approach, we're going to serve people in this dinner the product as meat and only later tell them that it's not meat and see what would be the reaction without all of this baggage on vegan food or plant-based food, meat alternative. And eventually it's healthier, so it's a healthier product, much better for the environment. But hopefully they will be the judge as good and as tasty and as strong experience as a beef product.
How exciting. I cannot wait to hear what the results are. Maybe we have to, I know you're so busy, but perhaps we'll need to have a follow-up call down the road for our listeners so they can too find out how the tasting went.
So the tasting, we're asking ourselves what would be success. And probably, so I would aim that almost 100% of the people will not know it's not meat, but probably if 20% or more will think it's meat, at the stage where we are, it's a big achievement.
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful. It's so exciting. So best of luck on that. And so I really wanted to dive into how you got to this place. What is the actual process of creating a meat that tastes and looks and feels like the real thing? Could you break that down a little bit for us, especially because it's such a new idea to most people?
Yeah, so I can break it down without going too much deep into the technology. Basically, when you look at what is meat from animals, and for the sake of simplicity, let's look at beef, bovine meat, what you have is essentially muscle. So the entire structure, we can call it muscle, but it's actually comprised of muscle fiber. This is one very important element that gives most of the bite and the texture that you feel in meat. Within the fibers of muscle, you have trapped moisture, water, with elements that give flavor and give the color, the red color. Much of it is myoglobin, but not only. Within the matrix of fibers of muscle, you have fat. And the fat is intertwined within the muscle. And when you cook it and when you eat it, the fat contributes a lot to the juiciness, to the mouthfeel, and also to the flavor delivery. And all of this structure of muscle, moisture, and fat is trapped within connective tissue. So if you look at meat, this is what you have. And there are many ways today to break down the ingredients of meat and find ingredients in nature that can correlate with these ingredients. So just as an example, muscle is mostly protein. You can find plant-based protein that through different processes comes closer in texture to a muscle from an animal or from a cow. And fat from animals is very complex, but there are plant-based fats that can come close in essential properties to animal fat. So we start from a formulation and we make three formulations. We formulate what we call muscle. So it doesn't have anything from an animal, but it's mostly protein and water. And it can have the same texture and the same water content and the same juiciness and many other attributes as muscle from an animal. And then we create fat. So the fat is completely plant-based, but it has similar physical properties and chemical properties and, of course, nutritional properties as animal fat, even better because we don't have any cholesterol. And then we create something that we call blood. And the blood is a carrier of flavor, of juiciness, and of color. And then we have the major components that is in meat. So we have muscle, we have fat, and we have blood as separate formulations. And these are our building blocks. This is step one. The second step is in meat, you don't have muscle and fat and moisture just spread around. So it's not a random mixture. It's actually a very complicated matrix. The fibers have a structure and have a size and length. The fat is within this muscle, so what is called marbling. You can actually see it if you cut a ribeye steak. You can very easily see it. Not only the ingredient contributes to the texture, the appearance, the flavor, the juiciness, the cooking process, but in to a very important extent also this matrix. And what's unique about us, the secret sauce that makes us more meat-like, is that we can create via 3D printing this matrix. So the matrix that we create is not as complex as animal meat, but it's the most complex matrix in food that I know of. So there is no other food product out there today that has this complexity of matrix. Some pharmaceutical elements have high level of complexity, but in food, it's mostly very simplified matrix. And our ability to create this complex matrix allows us to use the ingredient in a better way to fool you that you're eating meat. Through the matrix, we're creating a human experience that sends your brain a signal, I'm eating meat. Because if you just take the ingredients and mix them together, you can have a meat-flavored dough or a meat-flavored cake. But once you have this matrix that you bite through muscle, and this muscle releases a moisture with a certain flavor and a certain viscosity level, and then you continue in the bite through fat, and releases different flavor in different steps, signals to your brain, I'm eating meat. This is something that comes out of an animal. And this is the aha moment of people that come to our lab, that we give them something to put in their mouth to eat. They know it's not meat, but the brains tell them, you're eating meat now. And they say, are you sure there's nothing from an animal here? It's impossible that there's nothing from an animal here. Even without flavor. So, for example, we can give you a product without flavor. The texture will signal to you that you're eating meat, because in the matrix, we can put muscle and fat in a way that is similar to what goes on in meat. Of course, every element, how we create the formulation, how we build this matrix, what is the way we 3D print, is very, very complicated, and a lot of it is our proprietary information. But essentially, the secret, the most important element is matrix to create that delivers an experience and sensation of meat.
Wow, and you've really dissected all of the elements and even the triggers, the neurological triggers, it sounds like, of meat. But it also just sounds really cool because you're going through a matrix. And I now am just dying to try it. That's very cool. Thank you so much for breaking that down. Let's talk about cost. Unlike lab-grown meat, which they're saying could still take up to decades to hit the market at affordable prices, it does seem like 3D printing is a more cost-effective way to produce alternative meat products for the market. Could you tell us a bit more about why this is the case and what kind of prices we can expect to see when it's more widely available?
So I'll tell you why 3D printing has the potential to do it and why currently it doesn't do it. So if you look at 3D printing, what we're doing, we are based on plant ingredients. So the ingredients that we use today, of course, we have a very small scale and we are buying very small quantities. But still, the raw ingredients are cheaper than meat. If you look at the cost of the protein and the amount that you need to use and the different elements, it's cheaper than growing a cow for 2 years and then slaughtering it. So with all the feed and water and land that it's printing, is the fact that even if the ingredient costs nothing, you have a machine that is very slow and somebody needs to operate it and it has electricity cost. So the cost of operating the machine is the burden on the product. So if you look at 3D printing of polymers today, polymers are not expensive. But the fact that you need an expensive machine and very high skilled operator to operate it is what makes it very expensive. Our approach is we are scaling up 3D printing for food, increasing the speed, and taking down the operational cost per pound that we create. And this is the challenge of 3D printing. So 3D printing, it's complicated to use 3D printing in the right way to create better meat alternative. This is one part that we are working on. We have a good product, we're improving it. The second is how you scale 3D printing to make it faster and cost effective. And here we believe we have a different approach, because we say what is important in 3D printing for our process and what isn't important. And everything that isn't important, that is important when we print plastics or when we print ceramic or when we print metal, that isn't important for food, we take out. And actually, when you look at our 3D printing process, we don't print a shape. The shape is negligible. We have a general shape of a meat-like product, but we took out the degrees of freedom of creating any different shape. But we are optimizing the shape that we have. We can optimize the matrix very well. And this allows us, so today we're doing it in a small scale, but this allows us to jump in productivity to be much faster without overcomplicating the machine. And the machine that we're building now, the major platform that we're building, will produce 20 pounds per hour. which for a food production machine is very low. But for a 3D printer, it's an extremely huge amount of material to place down in a single hour. So most 3D printers will not print more than 2 pounds in a 24-hour day of operation. We're talking about 20 pounds per hour for a machine that can run 24/7. And this will allow us to cut down the cost, the operational cost. And because the ingredient costs are very low, eventually for us it's not 20 years, it's 3 to 5 years from now, we can be dramatically cheaper than meat, especially as we're targeting premium products. But when we'll go to the market, it will be priced pretty similar to meat, to decent meat. So not high-end meat, but not low commoditized meat. And you can see, so today we're actually creating large amounts. So it's not like clean meat that you can physically produce very little amounts. We produce several pounds for every experiment that we make, usually once or twice a week. So it's not huge production, but it's not a few grams.
And you have mentioned that you're going to be releasing your first product into the market slated for 2020. What exactly are you working on to release? Will you sell directly to consumers, or are you going to start in restaurants?
Okay, excellent question. First of all, no, we're not going to go directly to consumers. We don't think that the company, what it brings to the world, is a new way to sell meat to consumers. We believe what it brings to the world is a new way to create meat, not coming from animals. And we want as much as possible to tap into existing supply chain and the existing industry that sells meat. And actually, the first products, which isn't the ultimate goal, but the first product, the first machines, will be placed within the established operations of the butchers that we are working with now. So actually, people that make today meat, not make, but sell today meat, will produce their own meat instead of having carcasses or half carcasses coming to them from slaughter and they have to butcher it and age it. They will use our machine as an alternative to the cows and will create their own meat products as they need it. But their customers, so they will be our customers, and we are working with them now already. Their customers will be restaurants initially. So we don't want to go directly to consumers. We want to maintain the quality and create a good enough understanding on how you're going to use this meat product before we put it into the hands of consumers. But the next step after that is going to retail, so actually retailers to produce their own meat. And again, this is futuristic, so this is after 2020, but we are already working with several innovative and open-minded retailers, I have to say, because not for everybody makes sense, that believe that this technology and business model makes sense. We need to prove it, we need to show it, but they don't say, no, it doesn't make sense, you're thinking sci-fi. And we're lucky in that sense that we have already the potential customers or partners to launch the product even before we are interested in launching the product. And hopefully this will allow us in 2020 to place first machines around the world and have chefs probably in Europe and the USA produce meat products and serve it to people in a very fine context, in a very upscale version, but to make it in reality. And the product they will serve will be steaks. So this is the target. We are developing now the process, the platform, the machine. The ingredients are all optimized to be steak products, whole muscle meat.
Incredible. This is PR and marketing gold as well. I can just see all the headlines right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. We are talking today, we talk the day after tomorrow. Nobody liked it, then it's a PR nightmare because we have a mentor. I think that's the best advice that I ever got in my career. He told me nobody eats technology. If the product, if people don't like it, it can be an amazing, we can show it to food technologists and they can say, you have amazing texture, the flavor delivery mechanism that you created is nothing that I ever seen. But if you eat it and you don't say, I love it, I want to eat more, then who cares about technology?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's reminiscent, of course, of the infamous Impossible Burger story where they teamed up with well-known chefs who are specifically often creating meat recipes, right? And how that went so well because they had partnered with the so-called industry experts. I can see some parallels. Mm-hmm. In the strategy there. Yeah, no, that's incredible. I mean, it is so optimistic, the vision that you're creating, and so future forward. So are we actually going to be looking at butchers with their own machine in their own facility? Like they'll actually have a 3D printing machine in their butchery or their shop? Is that what it's going to look like, the model?
100%. this is exactly the model, and we have butchered several, not only in Israel, important to say Israel is an important pilot ground, but not a target market, that accept this model, accept the cost structure that we have, the pricing model that we have, and some already in the early version that we have today like the product quality. And this is a very important thing for us, because for a butcher that sells meat to give the stamp of approval to our product is, even for me, even better than having a chef do it, because chefs can be very creative with ingredients, with produce. Butchers rely on the fact that the ingredient in the pure form is perfect. So butchers deliver something that you can just put on the grill, maybe with salt and pepper, and you eat it like that. So not sophisticated ingredients that you incorporate in a very fancy dish, but something that you eat almost as is. And if they're willing to put it with the reputation and the business that they have today, for us, it's an amazing achievement. But we don't see a reason for the butcher not to create their own meat. So we don't see a reason, for example, for us to set up 3D printing meat hubs and ship the products to butchers, because it's not going to be complicated. It's not going to be more requiring skill to 3D print meat in comparison to butchering a cow.
Wow, this is so fascinating, and I'm sure it will be for listeners as well. You're essentially painting a world that we could never have imagined. Wonderful. So a couple more questions for you. I know we have time constraints. Let's get to the last two questions. So are there any surprising or unexpected ways that you imagine your product or the technology to be used in the future beyond the steaks and this model that you've shared so far?
So I think, for me, when I started the company and also in everything that we do in terms of R&D, we ask ourselves, what is the problem we're trying to solve, and not what cool things we can do with our technology. And I had many people ask me, can you use it for creating alternative cheese or to create a new consumer experience? But I don't think there is a problem there that we can solve. So this is one. So we are really, really focused on the fact that we can do beef now, and we will improve beef, but then we can also do pork, and we can do lamb and tuna. And there's so many problems to solve just in creating alternative meat. And the industry is so big that we should focus on that. One thing that a few of the smart people that have experience have told me is, we are trying to imitate meat. Maybe the imitation of meat can have a life of its own. Maybe it can be a very good, tasty food product with a strong sensation and strong flavor and texture experience that is not necessarily trying to match something else. So perhaps this can be the case, that we're creating a new category of super tasty, super rich food that doesn't position itself versus animal meat. But I think for me personally, it's much more interesting to see how this technology can be used as a platform to just mark off more meat products that don't have alternatives today or don't have good alternatives, that we can easily move from one to another and launch it pretty quickly. So not have this intense, long development cycle for every new beef product or every new other kind of meat products that we have. And our ideas and our product roadmap and future roadmap is so long that we have enough work for many, many years besides going to other directions or looking at other alternatives.
Right, right. So happy accidents may happen, but it does sound like once the butchers have the machine, they could actually use different prototypes or these different versions of the matrices to create things beyond beef, such as pork, as you mentioned, et cetera, lamb, things like that, which is in itself an incredible, let's call it, portfolio to look forward to. So one more question for our listeners wanting to know more about Jet Eat and the work you're doing. Is there anywhere you would like to suggest they can go to keep up to date with your work or learn more?
So first, they should all visit Israel, because we're very happy to have visitors. We don't share too much about our technology online. We don't think it's right. And also, we have some things that we must keep secret. We have an active LinkedIn page where we share mostly collaborations we do or some events that we take part in. I think that in the next year, we'll be more open on what we're doing, because you see, I explained a lot of the things today because we have a patent pending status on many of the things we discussed. And for some elements, like the machine, how it works and how we scale up to production, we're working on the patents now, so I cannot share. So as we progress with our patent strategy, we can also be more open and share more online. We're very responsive, so if somebody reaches out through our website, I promise an answer within 24 hours maximum. And if people are interested in what we're doing, why we're doing that, when are we going to have a product in the market and have ideas about our product, we're happy to hear. So we're still a small company that wants to engage with as many people as much as possible, because also important to say what we're doing is not easy. And we already have a few partners helping us in R&D, helping us in analytics, helping us with go-to-market. And this is something we also believe in. We need to create an ecosystem. So we cannot do it alone. We cannot isolate our own protein. We need companies to isolate protein for us. And luckily for us in Israel, we have a very strong ecosystem. So we have companies doing alternative proteins as an ingredient. We have companies doing clean meat that we're sharing the same cause with different technologies and different time to market. But we're working together. We're helping each other almost on a weekly basis. And if people see an opportunity to interact and help, we'd be happy.
So visit Israel, contact you through your website, or check out your LinkedIn page, which looks like it's actually Redefine Meat. That's the name of the...
Yeah, so, you know, this is something very important. I mean, to say we're not JetEat anymore. Yesterday, it took me 3 months because we decided that the company needs a different name. 6 months ago, and it took us 3 months to decide what would be the name. But actually, to make the switch, we always looked for the right opportunity to make a switch. And then just, I said, okay, we're doing it. And we're calling it Redefined Meat because JetEat puts the technology in front. And this is due to my technological background in other industries and not in the food industry. And the feedback that we got constantly is that we're dealing with food and we're dealing with the problem. And we need to put the problem or the vision in front and not the technology. And we went for different names, but Redefined Meat is really what we're trying to do, because we're not trying to copy meat and we're not trying to take meat out of the game. We're just trying to redefine what is meat.
It's perfect. And the tagline is for the love of meat. So, I mean, absolutely. It's perfect. You know what? We have 5 more minutes and I have to ask you one more question, if you don't mind, Ash. I'm curious. You decided to pivot your career towards something that meant something personal to you, that is mission driven, very recently. Do you feel different in your day-to-day work than when you were in technology? I know you were doing the same 3D printing work, but now that you're actually doing something that is your own, but also is so connected to your personal mission, how does the work feel? Does it feel different to you?
You cannot even start to imagine what difference it is in the experience, besides the fact that now I'm founder of a company and it's a startup. So I know, again, something personal, I don't think all people can relate to it. In my past career, I really enjoyed it and it was really interesting. But still, I had to give myself an excuse every day. Why am I going to work? Why am I going today to work in this company that does amazing technology that I really don't care about? Because there are great people, or because it's really fun, or because, you know, it pays well, or because it's going to be important for my career, or because I can tell people I'm a product manager, I'm a VP marketing, and tell something about me. But I still have to have this excuse. Now, trust me, I don't need any excuse. I don't see any reason to do anything else besides doing what I'm doing today. And I cannot imagine a better job, a better industry, a better challenge to pursue. And now I have really what people call passion. So I'm really passionate about creating a different kind of meat. I'm not passionate about 3D printing meat, but I'm passionate about what the company is trying to achieve. And then first, it's much easier to work harder. And second, it's much easier to bring people to join this mission, because people want to have something that is interesting in technology. It's a good business. It's challenging, but they can really understand why they're doing it. And they can do it because it's good for the environment. They can do it because they believe this is the next big market, but this is real passion. And second, it's much more fun to have printers that you can eat what's coming out of it. For me, it's the best job in the world today.
Well, what an inspiring story, an inspiring product, and you, an inspiring leader. I think this will inspire others to look into this and pursue their more mission-based potential career path.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of After Animals. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Or tell one friend about our show. The more people we have listening, the faster we can spread the word. Thank you.
The After Animals podcast's mission is to activate a kinder, more compassionate world through innovation.
After Animals is hosted by me, Yulara Nakagawa,
and me, Sharanya Krishna Prasad.
For the animals.